Hey everyone, welcome to the Resolutions Podcast, where we like to turn difficult topics into helpful conversations. I'm your host, Chris Campbell. Our episode guest today is a familiar friend of this podcast, Bob Waddell. Bob is the president of Bob Waddell Financial Coaching and a Dave Ramsey Certified Financial Coach with Financial Peace University. You know, the year 2020 was one for the books. 2021 looks to be another challenging year, and many are concerned about what this upcoming year could mean for them financially. As most people know, financial stress is a leading contributor to mental duress and anxiety, fear, and even depression. So it's important to revisit the topic of financial strategies on a regular basis. This podcast show will first air during the first quarter of 2021. This is a time when people are doing taxes and evaluating their financial status as we come up on the 12-month mark of the COVID-19 pandemic here in the U.S. So we thought it would be a good time to once again tap into the practical and prayerful logic of Bob Waddell. Our conversation with Bob begins with a practical approach for doing a personal financial assessment. Bob explains how to calculate your financial net worth. Bob then explains how to determine the direction your financial net worth is trending. Bob goes on to explain practical ways to increase your financial net worth in the months ahead. We then shift our conversation to retirement saving and how to set a reliable benchmark for steady financial decision-making when it comes to the future. At the end of our podcast, our co-host Michael Gumm will tell you how to find out more information on this topic and how to get in touch with today's guest. Here is our conversation with Bob Waddell.
So the master leaves on a long journey, and he gives each servant a sum of money according to the servant's ability. So in the first servant, he gives 5 talents. The second servant, he gives 2 talents. And to the third servant, the last servant, he gives 1 talent. Mm-hmm. And he instructs them. He said, you know, manage this for me while I'm gone. And then it goes on to say that he's gone for a long time. And when the master returns, he brings each one to account. And he asks them, what did you do with the money that I gave you? What did you do with my talents? And the first one comes back and he says, I put your money to work. I invested it. I used it. I did business and I doubled the money. So you gave me 5. I turned it into 10. Here's the 10. And he says, good job. Well done. Second servant, same story, 2 talents, turns it into 4. And same thing. Well done. Good job. Great work. The third servant comes who got 1 talent. And he says, well, I know that you're a hard man. And then he said, I was afraid. And because I was afraid, I just buried it in the ground so that I wouldn't lose it. And here it is. Here's your talent. So here's the 1 talent that you gave me. And that's all I have. And the master's furious. And he says, hey, you could have at least put it in the bank and made interest. You know, you could have at least earned a little bit of interest. Then I would have had, you know, 1.01 talents, but you didn't. He said, wicked servant. And he casts him out. And it's pretty ugly what happens next. But, you know, the story is that we're given money and we're supposed to be stewards of that money. And that's a good way to look at it is, you know, just as in the story, the master let them have the money and use the money. They were stewards of it. Whereas, you know, as Christians, we should look at money and time and resources and family as those things belong to God, and we're stewards of that as well.
That's such a good point. You know, and that is important to think through, because how you frame your resources makes a huge difference. You know, if by faith you can ascertain that everything that that you have has been given to you or on loan to you, including our kids, I mean, I'll say that, you know, from God, then your theology kicks in. And if you believe that God is a hard person with, you know,
a very little tolerance for failure or risk, and you live in fear of that, you are not going to step into the good pleasure of playing with house money, right? Exactly. Yes. And I think God delights to see how creative we can be, even if it's with little resources that we've been entrusted with on an earthly level anyway, to see what type of return on investment that we can get. So this particular show isn't about working towards financial independence, but I think there are some certain points that you are really good to help people with, especially with our listeners, as we've had you on here before, to say, okay, what are some building blocks that allow you to really be opportunistic in the days ahead, in the years ahead? So let's talk about where we are right now. Walk us through, a bit of an outline here as far as what can people keep in mind that not only puts them in a place of being efficient and responsible, but even opportunistic coming into what we pray and hope and believe is going to be a better year ahead. So get us started here, Bob. You're calling us to look at where we are right now.
Yes, absolutely. So, as always, from a financial peace point of view, I always preface what I say to where you are on the baby steps. So if you're at the point and you're on baby step 1, 2, or 3, which, if you haven't done financial peace, baby steps 1, 2, and 3 are just putting an emergency fund away and getting out of debt, paying off all your debts except for your house. So if you're there and you're in the early part of the journey, then what I would say to you is look at where you are right now and chart the progress and say, how much debt do I have left and how far away am I from getting out of debt? Now, for those who are in baby steps 4 and beyond, 4 through 7, the same advice, look at where you are is true, but looking at where you are is a little bit different because your debts are paid off. So you don't have to add up the debts, because that's zero. But what you're going to add up is your savings and your retirement. And look at where you are. So it's a plus number. But either way, the best thing to do is to look at where you're starting in order to see where you're going. A lot of people are afraid to do that early on in their financial journey, their financial peace journey, because they're afraid of what they're going to find. And what I found most of the time is when you sit down and you add it up, it's actually not as bad of news as you think it's going to be. Most of the time people think that their debt is insurmountable, but when they sit down and add it up, they realize, oh, okay, well, it's not good, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. But you've got to have a number to start from. It's the analogy. When I sit down with somebody, one of the first things I ask is when you open up a map. Now, for millennials, they might not know what that is. But back in the old days, they had these paper things and they were called maps. And you opened them, you unfolded them. And yes, it was a topographical representation of a place, of where you are. You're out in the woods. Here's the map. But a map does you no good unless you know where you are.
Yeah.
The great thing is when you go find a stationary map, if you're in the mall or if you're in the woods and there's a map, on a big placard, it's going to tell you, that you look for that. It's a big red sticker and it says you are here.
Yeah.
But when you have the ones you carry around, that doesn't work. You got to figure it out. You got to look and say, okay, where are you? So there's a formula and It's a simple formula, and it's your financial net worth. There's two things that go into the equation. One is the sum total of all your debts, of everything you owe. So this would be your house payment, your car payment, your student loan, your credit cards, everything you owe to everybody. What you owe to Grandma Sue, all of those debts, you add them up and put them together. And that's step one of financial peace regardless, is how much do I owe? So you add all those things together, that's your total debt. The second item is your assets. Now that is the total of the value of everything you own. One of the biggest things is your house. If you own a home and you want to figure out the value of the home and put that number in, you want to put in a good value. You know, there's websites where you can look it up, Zillow.com, you know, different places like that. But some of those data is way off. It's going to be off, you know, quite a bit, because it's only as good as the data that's put in. You know, as they say in computers, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you want to get a solid value for your house, the best way to do that is with an experienced real estate agent. A realtor will do what's called a CMA, or a comparative market analysis. And it's almost like a mini assessment of the value, the same thing they do, or mini appraisal, the same thing they do when you buy a house. They do an appraisal, the bank does an appraisal, and then they loan you money based on that appraisal. So a CMA will give you a value comparable to what a CMA would be. You can reach out to a local agent if you're in the Maryland or Virginia area. I would love to do that for you. If you're somewhere else, if you're in Colorado, find a local agent. They'd be happy to do a CMA. And just tell them up front. Just say, listen, I'm not looking to sell my house today, but I'd love to get a value. Hmm. And they'll do a CMA for you. It's something that takes, you know, about an hour to go through the numbers, and they can look at recent sales. And then I keep track of that year by year, and that, you know, gives you one more metric to add into the equation and make your numbers that much more solid. So yeah, your net worth is just assets minus debts, or assets minus liabilities equals your net worth. Hmm. And, you know, people ask me, well, why do I need to know that? I'm not trying to be a millionaire, or I'm not trying to do this, or I'm not trying to do that. The most important thing about that number is, where is that number going? The biggest thing I chart over time is the change year per year. I hadn't been doing that, but when I started doing that, what I saw is in the early days, you know, I was making progress. The negative number got smaller, and then eventually, you know, because I own a house, the positive number became larger. But every year, it didn't change that much. You know, I was making a certain amount of money at work, but my net worth changed a much smaller amount. But then over time, as I started saving, and because of compound interest and home appreciation, my net worth actually grew by a greater amount than the money I made year per year. And that's because of compound interest and because of appreciation and because I had gotten out of debt. So all those factors started to play in, so that eventually, you know, I can retire with dignity, and you'll see that effect. But you'll never know that or see that if you don't know the number. Hmm.
That's a great explanation. And, you know, the other thing too that I know you're big on, and that is, hey, celebrate the little victories, you know, as you move forward. You know, those are incremental times where it's good to look and to really take some satisfaction that you're establishing some momentum moving forward. And again, if people are, you know, our fans, they're listeners, regular listeners to this podcast, it'll be easy to go back and track some of your help before as being a guest on here, but we'll have all of the most important and relevant links and connections up in our podcast show notes here today as well. But talk a little more about, what do you got to keep track of moving forward? What are some things that you gotta keep on the radar, not just to sustain the momentum, but to actually continue to see an increase in that net worth value?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it starts on your monthly budget. What are you spending? You know, if you're spending more than you should be, or you know, especially if you're spending more than you're making, you've got to see, where am I spending that money? Where is it going? sometimes just the awareness of what you're spending will change your habits. You know, everybody wants to make a budget, and you should. But the first step is seeing where you're spending it. You know, the first thing I realized was I was spending a fortune on eating out.
Yeah.
I was spending far more on eating out than I should have or needed to. And it was perfectly fixable. You know, all I had to do was start making food at home and taking it with me and, you know, not going out to eat. You know, I was working in an office at the time. And so everybody would go out to eat. And I just said, you know, that's okay. I'm going to eat at my desk. And I would eat out one day a week and save a fortune. You know, I didn't have to cut it all off, but that made a huge difference. Mm. So yeah, it's the little things. It's the monthly habits that lead to the number. If you're spending more than you're making, you know, if you can just trim that back and change that budget a small amount per month, it's going to make a big difference over the year. Mm. And that's going to make a difference in being able to pay down the debt and ultimately increasing your net worth. Mm.
That's really good. Really good. So talk us through, and I think you're hitting on this, how is the difference between a steady state or acceleration? And what's the difference between acceleration and speed when you're talking about increasing net worth? So increasing assets, decreasing debts. Go into that a little bit. Explain that for us, Bob.
Sure. Well, if you follow this advice and you chart your progress, and let's say you put a point every year of your net worth. So at the end of the year, December 31st, here's my net worth, and you make a chart. And what you see in that chart is, you know, you do that for 2 or 3 years and you see, okay, each year, you know, I'm making $50,000 and my net worth is increasing, $20,000, you know, I'm because I'm paying down debt. So my debt is going down and because of that, my net worth is increasing. And then you look at it and you get a little frustrated and you say, okay, well at this rate, you know, it's going to take me, you know, 5 more years to get out of debt. And then, you know, in 5 years after that, I'm going to have a net worth of $100,000. Well, that, you know, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but what you don't realize is that as you pay that debt down, the acceleration comes is not when you're gaining $20,000 a year. You'll gain $20,000 a year for the first few years, and then it'll start going by 30 and 40 and 50, because when you're in debt, the compound interest is working against you.
Yes.
Because you're paying interest.
Yes.
Once you've paid off that small debt, then you're investing and you're putting money away in a 401k, or you're putting money in a retirement account, an IRA or Roth IRA. Now compound interest is working for you. So you're going to see the acceleration of that money. So eventually, you know, let's say you're still making $50,000 a year, your debt's paid off. Now your net worth is changing by 40 and 50 and $100,000 a year. It's mm-hmm. going up mm-hmm. because the change in that net worth isn't from the money that you made. It's from the interest on the money that's invested.
Yeah. That's really putting the cookies on the lower shelf. I appreciate that. You know, that's well said. But the hard question to ask is my plan working?
Exactly.
And if it is, great. What can I do to tweak it? If it's not, then why not? I think that's what you're getting at here, right? So talk a little more. Am I in the ballpark as far as really catching what it is that you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And in order to do that, you know, you don't want to measure yourself by other people. You don't want to look at somebody else and say, well, how are they doing and how am I doing? That's the wrong choice, because first off, you never know how anybody else is doing.
This is true.
You know, you look at your neighbor and, you know, I've got a 2002 Honda Odyssey in my garage and my next door neighbor has a Mercedes, you know, or something, you know, crazy. That's not a measure, because I don't know what he owes on that Mercedes, but I don't know anything on my Honda Odyssey. So, you know, it's in the plus column. So that's not how you look at it. But what you do need to do is you need to be able to measure your plan and the progress thereof in a way that is, you know, that you can measure it against a standard. The best way, if now when you're paying down debt, it's a little bit different, but let's shift gears and talk about retirement and investing. So if you've got a retirement account, you've got an IRA, and I just turned 50 this year. So if you're in your 40s or 50s or even 60s, and you're looking for the heavy growth leading up to retirement, in over 10 years away, then you should be seeing good growth. Now, you can't measure that growth in a vacuum. You've got to look at that against a benchmark. So there's two main benchmarks that exist. One is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and one is the S&P 500. And all those are is a group of companies that they just add together. There's this formula, but ultimately they just add together a group of stocks. The S&P 500 is 500 different stocks, and they add the values of those stocks together. And that number is a benchmark number that's looked at and used by people all over. Now, if you're investing, you're doing one of a few things. You're either just using the standard mutual funds, which is great. If you've got some great, good mutual funds or good options from your employer, you're doing it yourself, or you're paying somebody to manage your funds. So, but whatever you're doing, one of those three methods you're doing, you need to measure against those other funds. And you need to see, because you could just buy an S&P index fund. What that means is you buy a fund with all 500 of those stocks in the fund. Okay. So if whatever your method is not doing as well as the S&P 500, and I don't mean just 1 year, but over time. So if you've done this for 5 to 10 years, and you take an average, so my average is 12% per year, and the S&P 500's average is 12.5%, well, then you should just buy an index fund, because you could be doing better. If the S&P is doing 12% and you're doing 14%, well, then you've beat it. So you're doing the right thing. Mm. And I bring that up specifically because if you're in the third category where you're paying someone to manage your investments for you, and you're not doing as well as the S&P 500, well, now not only are you behind the S&P, but you're probably behind by another percent, because that's usually what you're paying. You're usually paying a percentage per year. So if the S&P is doing 12 and you did 12.5, but you're paying 1% to somebody to manage, well, you didn't beat it. Mm-hmm. You're doing 11.5. Mm-hmm. Because you paid 1% to your fund manager. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that you have to look at. If, and you'll only know this if you're tracking it and if you're watching it, because, the guy who's managing your funds, he's going to send you congratulations. He's going to send you a Christmas turkey, or a Christmas ham. He's going to send you, all sorts of information, but he's not going to send you a note saying, "Hey, by the way, you actually lost because I didn't, with my fee, you didn't do quite as well as the S&P 500. You're not going to know that unless you look it up.
That's good advice. And here's the thing, I want to pull this back to Matthew 25, the parable of the talents that we started with, because, there's a certain aspect that I would imagine as people, if they're hanging in there with us listening, you can either get a sort of a deer in the headlights glaze over your eyes, or you can feel anxiety increasing as we're talking about long-term strategies. But I just want to encourage people, all we're doing is suggesting, hey, are you able to, do you know the tools, or do you know the way to assess, what you are doing with the resources that God has given you? When you can figure out short term, and then if you have sort of just the basic tools to begin to ascertain long term what's a good strategy, then there's a lot of things that you can do to tweak that process and refine it. And now all of a sudden your money is working for you rather than you working for your stuff, if that makes sense. All right. So let me, there's one more thing that I know you're big on that you've talked about before, but before we let you off here, before we wrap up, I want to go back and let you speak to this issue. And it's always, you know, a fundamental point that you tend to bring up with in our conversations and with others. And that is this, it's a question that you ask. Are you paying someone to do something you can do yourself?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to give you your platform. Here's your soapbox. Step on it. Give us a few minutes of that.
Yeah. And I talked about that a little bit in, you know, a fund manager. So when it comes to investing, if you're using someone to invest for you, you know, that's fine. You know, there's some great managers and it's a great field, especially if you're inexperienced and you don't know what you're doing. But you've got to check them. You've got to follow their work and see, number one, what am I investing in? You know, what is this person putting my money in? And number two, how are they doing with it? Because, you know, if you're one of those, you know, three people that have the talents, you've got to know what's going on. You know, it's fine if you've got somebody helping you, especially if you have, you know, a whole lot of money and, you know, you're not familiar with that. But you've got to be able to see that. And when you track that over time, you're going to see, because, you know, when I started saving for retirement and investing, I didn't know a thing. And I used mutual funds and invested in things and they did great. But over time, I began to learn for myself and study and read. And I subscribed to newsletters. I read The Motley Fool and I looked at different companies and evaluated them. And I started doing that to the point where now I do invest myself and I can, on average, beat the S&P 500 by 1% or 2% per year. And I don't have to pay anybody to do it because I do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am managing my own investments. But I've done that after 20 years of reading and learning and studying on my own. So if that's something that you want to get to, then do that. You know, use someone now, but learn. Use somebody who's going to teach you. Ask them, ask questions, read, learn, understand. And then over time, you'll be able to do it yourself. Even if it's something that's completely foreign to you now, teach yourself so that you can do it in the future.
Hey friends, this is Michael Gumm, co-host of the Resolutions Podcast. We hope you've been encouraged by today's episode. We would love for you to subscribe to our podcast on the platform of your choice. Leave us a favorable review and, of course, tell your friends. The Resolutions Podcast exists to bring the best of integrated therapeutic discussions to the widest audience possible, free of charge. To find more information and resources from today's guest, Bob Waddell, please be sure to check out the show notes on our website, resolutionsofwv.com. Thanks again for joining us. We'll sync up with you again next episode.